Most Asian economies have become middle-income countries. And now major challenge for developing Asia is how to move up from middle-income and join the high-income group.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks, a series of interviews with practitioners around the world. My name is Tim Phillips. Today I'm joined from Asian Development Bank headquarters in Manila by Yasuyuki Sawada, the bank's chief economist. It's now more than 50 years since the Asian Development Bank was formed to boost growth in the region. It's also 20 years after the Asian financial crisis and 10 years after the global financial crisis. So this is a good time to reassess how resilient Asian economies have become and what's going to drive future development in the region. Dr. Sawada, since the bank was founded in 1966, the Asian share of the world economy has increased dramatically. So is the remit of the bank now different?
Looking back when ADB was established in year 1966, Asian Pacific region was defined by poverty. The largest concern at that time was how to feed a large and growing population. So naturally, ADB placed its focus on agriculture sector. So now, half a century later, Asia became one of the largest economies in the global economy, and one-third of global GDP is now generated by Asia, and more than half of the global economic growth is created by Asia. So region is rapidly developing, and as a result, poverty has been reduced substantially. So now, today, transport sector and energy sectors comprises around 50% of ADB's operation. And over the past half a century, ADB has basically achieved three broader functions. Number one is ADB provide finance, but not only finance, but also combining finance with knowledge to support developing member countries. Number two function is promotion of good policies. Through high-level policy dialogue with state leaders, ministers, technical assistance, capacity building, and also policy-based budget support loans, ADB has been supporting good policies. For example, oil crisis in 1970s, Asian financial crisis in 1990, global financial crisis 10 years ago, ADB provided emergency loans when our members were hit by crisis. And finally, a third achievement by ADB function is to foster regional cooperation and friendship. One of the mandates is facilitation of regional cooperation in Asian Pacific region. Over the years, ADB has promoted sub-regional cooperation framework in Central Asia, South Asia, Southeast Asia, and Pacific region. So these are the quick overview of ADB's role change over half century.
Despite the success of many economies in the region, Asia is still home to millions of the world's poorest people. What do you do to combat extreme poverty?
As you correctly point out, Asia is still home to 40 or so percent of global poor, or 330 million poor people still living in Asian region. So I think in order to tackle this still substantial poverty issues, ADB has been and will be play two roles basically. Number one is I firmly believe sustainable development or growth is an indispensable component of continuous poverty reduction. In order to achieve this, Asia needs to invest in $1.7 trillion per year in infrastructure investment. And with that, Asia can support continued growth, maintain poverty reduction trend, and also address climate change mitigation and adaptation. ADB has been and will be playing a core role in filling this large investment demand in infrastructure through providing loans, grants, and technical assistance to our developing member countries in Asia and Pacific. Number two, at the same time, to make growth more inclusive, ADB has been a key player in this region's progress towards meeting sustainable development goals or SDGs. ADB has increased its support to various sectors and thematic areas such as health, education, food security, social protection, and financial inclusion. In addition, ADB will work towards gender equality through our operations. Particularly, ADB's poorest members, including those in fragile and conflict-affected situations, such as small Pacific Island economies, will receive priority in our ADB's allocation of resources.
How much of a problem do you think that rising inequality is in the region?
Admittedly, growing income inequality is not only global concern, but also developing Asia. Inequality in Asia has widened in a majority of economies. If we use the quarter century inequality trend, especially three most populous regional economies such as People's Republic of China, India, and Indonesia. In last two or so decades, inequality is increasing trend. Actually, inequality means not only poverty reduction effort can be mitigated, but also inequality itself can affect growth negatively. And also high and extreme inequality can damage society and institution, also leading to a political backlash. So in order to reduce negative consequences of inequality, government should play a quite important role. For example, adopting an efficient fiscal policy and also intervening in order to address lacking regions, also addressing more employment-friendly growth, etc., government and public sector can play a very important role to reduce negative consequences of inequality in Asian Pacific region. ADB also has been supporting to achieving more inclusive growth in developing Asian countries through not only facilitating investment in infrastructure, but also to help mitigate adverse consequences of inequalities, including more and prioritize investment in lacking regions within each individual countries.
There's currently a lot of concern in Asia about pollution and poor air quality, and the Sustainable Development Goals now target both economic growth and the quality of the environment. So can you soften the environmental impact of economic growth?
So actually, emission from the Asian region has increased rapidly from 25% of global total in 1990 to 1999 to 40% in year 2012. Without strong climate policies, Asian region will generate nearly 50% of all greenhouse gas emissions by year 2030. So addressing environmental issue is quite important in Asian Pacific region. Low carbon transition requires economic adjustment and substantial new investment in energy efficient infrastructure and low carbon energy generation. So in order to achieve this, making energy production less carbon intensive by deploying different methods such as renewables, as wind, solar, biomass, and through carbon capture and storage. So these are quite important policies. And in order to adopt these key policies, putting a price on carbon emissions, supporting investment in clean and efficient energy, as well as fostering international action. These are quite critical policies. ADB has been, and again will be, playing a core role in pursuing this direction. ADB will double our annual climate financing for mitigation and adaptation to $6 billion US dollars by year 2020. We will help countries pursue this commitment under COP21 and environmentally sustainable growth by using loans, grants, and technical assistance. Given that climate change can trigger natural disasters, disaster risk reduction management will be integral parts of our operations, helping more environment-friendly and climate-friendly growth.
China is clearly the engine of the region's growth. So how resilient will other Asian economies be as China's growth slows?
This is a quite important question. So I'd like to respond to you in two ways. First, according to our area study based on data, we estimated impact of PRC, People's Republic of China, slowdown on the rest of Asia. If PRC growth slows by 1 percentage point, due to a number of factors, including escalation of trade tensions and other reasons, this 1 percentage point decline of Chinese growth will lead to 0.3 percent point off the rest of emerging Asia's growth each year, and also will reduce Japan's growth by 0.2 percentage point. So Chinese growth will generate big spillover effect in rest of Asia. Having said this, PRC's growth moderation presents both challenges as well as opportunities to the rest of developing Asia, depending on the country's characteristics and situation. Given the region's integration, growth moderation PRC will affect other countries through two main channels. Number one channel is through commodity prices, especially metals, where PRC is half of the global market, and this represents a challenge to commodity exporters, including those in Central Asia, because if Chinese economy slow down, then less global demand for some type of commodity, and the commodity prices decline. So that is not necessarily good news for commodity exporters. The other aspect or channel is through trade. Those with the strongest trade and production linkages with PRC will have to adjust. But there are opportunities too, because a well-positioned economy such as Bangladesh and Vietnam can benefit from Chinese shrinking labor force and rising labor costs by becoming alternative production centers. Also, now China is on a medium-term rebalancing its economy from export-driven to more domestic demand-driven. So this Chinese economy shift toward the consumption-led growth presents opportunity for countries that can cater to PRC's growing consumer market, including tourist demand.
It looks like we're in the early stages of a global trade war. How's Asia going to survive this outbreak of economic nationalism?
Yes, this is a quite important issue. We are all aware of recent development in escalating trade tensions, and we are watching them closely. However, I would like to affirm Asia and global economy have benefited continuously from an open and liberal global trading system since the end of World War II. Every country, including those in Asia, should preserve free trade. Nevertheless, direct impacts of restrictive trade measures imposed by currently U.S. now seems to be non-trivial, especially if U.S. tax nearly all imports from the PRC, and PRC responses is likely to be of the same magnitude. But there has been some major progress in multilateral free trade framework, which seems to be quite important from broader perspective. First, from the original Trans-Pacific Partnership, TPP, 11 member countries now signed comprehensive and progressive agreement for TPP, so-called CPTPP, in February this year. Secondly, another big progress in multilateral framework is ASEAN-led Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, or in short, RCEP, is progressing as well and is undergoing rounds of negotiations. And RCEP involves 10 ASEAN countries and 6 states, plus 3 countries, Korea, People's Republic of China, Japan, as well as Australia, New Zealand, and India. When concluded, the RCEP will be globally the largest free trade agreement in the world, with over 30% of global GDP and more than 3.5 billion people will be involved. Since these frameworks, multilateral frameworks, are progressing forward, I think overall Asian economy has been still moving towards the global free trade and investment system.
Technological innovation seems to spread very quickly in Asia. What economic effects will technology have on development in the region?
Yes, I'd like to respond to you in two ways. First, now I'd like to point out most Asian economies have become middle-income countries. And now major challenge for developing Asia is to overcome so-called middle-income trap and how to move up from middle-income and join the high-income group. According to our recent study, based on cross-country panel data, innovation is a key element in transcending middle-income challenges, and also complementary investment in human capital and relatively high-end infrastructure such as telecommunication and information critical. So this is the number one importance of innovation for Asia to moving forward. But secondly, I'd like to also point out there is a global concern. New technologies such as AI and robots could cause widespread job losses. However, in Asia, again, according to our research, we can be more optimistic about job prospects springs from the several observations. Number one, new technologies often automate only some type of task and job, not all the job. So in Asia, we can see there are rather positive impact of innovation and arrival new technology. Number two, job automation goes ahead only when it is both technically and economically feasible. Of course, arrival of sewing robots can be a potential threat for factory workers in Bangladesh. However, its economical feasibility is another necessary condition for sewing robot to materialize. Actually, according to our analysis of Asian data, both requirements of technical and economical feasibility tend to be limited in capital-intensive manufacturing, where employment shares were already low in recent years. Third, rising demand seems to offset job displacement effect by automation in Asia. According to our analysis in using the past 1 decade data, job creation by rising domestic demand through arrival of new technology, this creation effect is 88% increasing employment in the last 10 years, which is more than compensated for job losses due to technological advances or labor-saving technology, which is a 66% decline. So 88% positive impact versus a 66% negative impact of innovation arrival new technology we found in Asia, and overall net gain out of new technology. And finally, technological change and economic growth always create new occupation industries. Many new job titles have emerged in ICT, and the new types of job will rise healthcare, education, and in finance. Again, according to our data analysis, we saw quite a substantial positive impact of new occupation industry creation. Nevertheless, new technology alter skills required for workforce and may cause unemployment temporarily. Some firms downsize or close, so they make more likely to experience lower wage growth, exacerbating income inequality. So government have to respond to these challenges by ensuring workers are protected from any downside risk due to arrival of new technology and unable to harness new opportunities technologies provide. This will require coordinated action on skills development, labor regulation, social protection, and income redistribution policies. Also, government have to use new technologies in education and skills development, as well as to deliver such public services as social protection programs. Also, another important issue related to technological innovation is government need to support for new technologies must benefit people and protect their rights and privacy.
Yasuyuki Sawada, thank you.
Thank you very much, Tim.
Thank you for listening. For more in this series, check out our other podcasts at voxdev.org.